You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome to the happiest podcast on the internet. Massive Report podcast, where every week we report on a dominant crew victory. 2-0 over New York Red Bulls, and we'll break it all down with Ori Benatar, Bart Logan, Alex Stanek, and Sam Fahmy will maybe or maybe not say something. I don't know. Sam, you going to say anything?
I mean, I guess. First time caller, right. Long time listener, I guess. Something like that.
Thanks for checking in. It's good to see you. How's your wheel?
My wheel.
You know, fortune? You had a bum leg last season.
Oh yeah. No, it's we're approaching the 1-year anniversary here.
We are? You're kidding.
Yeah. So, but you know, thank God everything is good.
All right, good. Well, we'll have you in the starting lineup tomorrow against Atlanta. We'll get to that here in a few minutes. Fellas, how stunned were you by the starting 11 before the Red Bulls game?
I mean, I don't know if stunned was the word. It made pretty clear that, first of all, the confidence that Caleb Porter has and the depth in this team, and he's going about it, you know, as you'd like to see in a group stage, going with a strong rotation. We saw everybody within the 18 that hadn't made it in that first, you know, 4-0 thwomping. A bit surprised maybe to see Nagbe in there starting, just because he's a veteran who you know what you're going to get from him. And then Sebastian Berhalter, who I'm sure we're going to be talking about a lot with this. I thought we'd see, you know, maybe that trio in the middle of Artur, Nagbe, and Zeller Ryan starting. You had Berhalter swapped in for Artur, and that was a pretty seamless flip. But I was really impressed with the rotation that Berhalter, I'm sorry about that, Caleb Porter was able to put together.
Well, certainly, as they mentioned during the telecast, the idea, and the Red Bulls always want to press very high anyway, but they had to have been licking their chops seeing Berhalter in the starting 11, and they certainly went after him. But he held his own, right?
Yeah, Berhalter sort of started to get comfortable in the game. Early on, about the first 10, 15 minutes or so, he made a couple of errant passes. He had a little bit of butterflies, but he really started to get comfortable. He was cutting off passing lanes. He was making good decisions when he had the ball at his feet. But when you talk about that New York Red Bull high press, I mean, just remembering what happened in the game, for like the first 10, 15 minutes, Royer, Barlow, they were on Mensah and Williams. They were just running after them, sprinting as much as they could. By the time you got to about the 20, 25th minute of the first half, same with the second half, around minute 55, minute 60, they started getting tired. And yeah. I think it showed, because no changes were made in the Red Bulls lineup from the Cincinnati victory in game number one. They had the same starting 11. Caleb Porter decides to go with five starting 11 changes, and a lot of times, statistically, that's kind of a recipe for disaster when you make that many changes to the 11. You don't see the chemistry. Players are a little bit, you know, not on point. But they played fantastic. You know, seeing Berhalter, Williams, Chris Cadden, Santos, Etienne all slide into the team, they all had great performances against the Red Bulls. And I think in part, how tired New York was did play a factor. I think you could see that they were just exhausted by the time they got to 20 minutes past the beginning of each half, because they needed the energy, because they all had played a full game against, or not Cincinnati, they played Atlanta. What am I talking about? The big win against Atlanta. You know, they were running around. They had to hold on for the victory. Same starting 11. It's a recipe for disaster.
Alex, it's interesting to me and ironic that after a season where our depth was so challenged, I mean, we've already forgotten some of the goofy lineups we had to put out there last season. And now all of a sudden we seem to just have an embarrassment of depth, and one of our main rivals looks awfully thin after they're starting 11 and don't really have an answer for a hot weather game played in July. I mean, we came with a greater number of weapons than they did.
Yeah, and I don't really know what New York's been doing the last few years just in general with their roster. I'm not I don't even know what, I mean, if I were a New York fan, I would be very concerned just about the amount of money that's being put into that team and the lack of investment and the lack of any sort of interest in anything from Red Bull. I mean, they are such an afterthought now. I mean, I know that they're not even the Red Bull's favorite soccer team anymore, you know. You got Bundesliga teams that are lighting everything up, and maybe they're kind of the forgotten child at this point. But yeah, I mean, our backup squad, you know, the squad that we put out there for like a friendly looks like it's a playoff contender. You know, our kids are better than some of the starters for a lot of these teams. And, you know, I thought Sebastian Berhalter had a great game. You know, he was a little bit shaky at the beginning, but, you know, it's his first start ever. He's on, you know, television. All these eyes are on him. His dad is lording over the game from the sidelines in a chair, you know, as the only spectator in the entire stadium. And he's getting this halftime interview going on. So I'd be nervous too. I mean, a lot of eyes were on him. I thought he handled it very well. I thought the whole team handled it very well. You know, this team is the real deal. I'm not sure I've seen such a complete squad, maybe in crew history right now. It's so hard to tell from this tournament, and we're only two games in. But, you know, when you look at this squad in its totality, I'm not sure anybody's going to stop them for more than a game or two. This really looks like the real deal. We are out there humiliating teams, and New York were the latest in what, you know, will hopefully be a long line of teams that are humiliated, but really enjoyed the game and enjoyed seeing all my New York Red Bull friends absolutely miserable on the Twitter timeline. It was, you know, you hate to see it. It's just, it's so sad, and long may it continue.
Darlington Nagby is the kind of player that when he's on another club, for instance, when he was on Portland, when you watch a game, you're not watching him because what he does is so quiet. It's almost like Zen or some sort of martial art or something. And a lot of what he does is so subtle. But when you put him on your team and you put him out there against a club like Red Bulls that wants to press high when they have the energy to do so, you know what they want to do. And to have Nagby out there diffusing all of that pressure and making it look so effortless, you walk away from a couple of matches with him really as the center of the crew universe right now. And you just appreciate why it was that Caleb Porter had to bring this young man to this team. And I hate to say it because I love Will Trapp so much as a Columbus Crew fan, but Nagby's the better man for the job.
Yeah, he is.
Is anybody going to argue with me on this one?
No.
No.
Nope.
And I was the guy last season, you know, who said, you know, we're going to ditch Trapp, and we brought in Nagby. Like, this is a mistake. I don't know why we're getting rid of Trapp, and, you know, completely wrong. Like, that's 100%. That's a cold take at this point. There's no way that you can look at Will Trapp and the struggles that he had the last couple of years and look at what Nagby's shown so far and say that that was a bad play. I mean, letting him go to Miami sucked from a club identity standpoint. But Nagby is just a flat out better player in Porter's system. I think a lot of people saw Nagby play in Atlanta, and, you know, it worked at times and it didn't work at times. But we've got the Portland Nagby back again because it's Porter's system. And that was not just a fluke from Portland. That was the way that he interfaces with his coach. I think that's going to be amazing. We've got two players in the midfield, Nagby and Zellerayan, who will just embarrass defenders. I mean, you see two guys try to close down either one of those people, and they just dribble out of it. You know, I saw they put three guys on Zellerayan, and he just kind of skipped around them like they weren't even there. Did not impact him in the slightest. Got the passes off. Nothing happened. Same thing with Nagby. Those two guys are going to give defenses in midfield fits going through the season. I mean, it is going to be almost impossible to stop. And if they sit back, they're going to get punished. If they go at him, they're going to get punished too. I'm not sure what the solution is, but I'm not sure that there are teams with as talented enough midfields that you need that will actually be able to stop our midfield this season. It's just, it's so good.
You brought up a good point about Nagby fitting in Porter's system. But the other thing that he provides you that Will didn't do, while Will was a really good distributor, Nagbe can hold the ball longer. Mm-hmm. And he can create a lot of like those opening lanes, because then he's grabbing two midfielders or two attackers or the press towards him. But his ability to dance around them, I mean, in the New York game, I think in the second half, he just completely danced through two guys. And yep. He just undressed them. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I did think it was interesting. You brought up Zelarayan and Nagbe. And then we didn't even talk about Mukhtar dancing in front of three people at the top of the box. Mm-hmm. Also with that same skill, playing in that almost Zelarayan role, which... You know, I'm honestly, in this tournament, I've really been impressed by Mukhtar. And if he had scored that shot, that would have been goal of the tournament, probably goal of the year.
That's the best almost goal in Crew history. I challenge anyone to think of I've been a fan since 1996. I saw that and I literally was like hands on my head, jaw dropped for like a solid minute. It was an incredible, audacious chance. And you know, if you're not really confident that you're a big dog, like you don't even try that shot. You know, this is a team that is really, really confident in their own abilities. You know, they go out there not only just trying to beat teams, but to absolutely humiliate them and to like create things that will be memed on the internet. I mean, they are the real deal. Other teams should be terrified of this club. I can't wait to see about this next game, because I would love, love, love to just absolutely destroy Atlanta and shut their fans up for 2 weeks. Hopefully we get that opportunity. Maybe against Atlanta he'll do it. Maybe against Atlanta he'll just chip it from outside the box again and it'll go in. I hope he just keeps trying it until it happens, because
right, I mean,
he's definitely capable.
You mentioned the Mukhtar chip. The fact that we're also seeing him do that with a 2-0 lead with only like 10 minutes left in the game, that just shows that Porter is telling his guys, go at it, keep it going. They're not dropping into shells up 1-0 like a Jose Mourinho park the bus. They're not dropping into a shell with a 2-0 lead. They want to go at games, get goals, create interesting chances. And we mentioned Nagbe, Zelarayan, Mukhtar, these players that in tight situations, 3-4 guys on them can get out of it with their composure and their dribbling skill. When you have multiple guys on your team that can do that in a midfield position, your team can have a lot of dynamic opportunities to score, keep possession, and do a lot of stuff. It just opens up the floodgates for so many different ways to play and beat teams. So this team is incredibly exciting, but we can't not talk about the defense. Jonathan Mensah was Caleb Porter's man of the match. Mensah was in the right spot at the right time all game. And guess what? Cruyff played 4 games in 2020, yet to concede in open play.
And no shots on goal for Red Bulls, which is an absolute embarrassment for them. Josh Williams, who hadn't played in a long time in a competitive match, didn't seem to show any rust. I got real excited about Chris Cadden. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when you have players that are controlling the midfield and drawing that sort of attention, it leaves Cadden with a lot of space. He has pace, and he was up and down the sideline on the right wing, creating havoc as well. And I'd like to see him play more. I'd like to see him be in the starting 11 again tomorrow against Atlanta. We'll see if that happens. Any thoughts on Cadden that I'm missing?
Yeah, one of these times I think he's going to, you know, provide Jossi with something that he can do something with. Because the service, I think, the end product, I think, was probably what you wanted to – you felt like was missing the most from Cadden, but okay. Not all to be surprised. And especially when we're dealing with MLS, you're not necessarily getting great service from your wing backs, you know, as a rule. But I think that's also something that, you know, as the chemistry builds, as they get used to each other, as they just get used to playing again, playing competitively, I think you're going to see those crosses will be a little bit crisper. And then it's something that, you know, that can be dangerous, because we know Jossi, when you give him good service, he might blow it a couple times, but if you keep giving him, and that was the thing, because Cadden, for as inaccurate as the crosses may have been, he was continuing to generate and continuing those chances. That if you keep giving you those chances, eventually good professionals like him, Jossi Zardes, they're going to connect, and you're going to be picking the ball up from out of your net.
I
was just going to ask, basically, Alex, wasn't Cadden the one who threw the ball in to, you know, start that lead into the first goal?
I think so.
There's another reason. Because New York was out of position. Catton just gets a quick throw in. Pedro Santos has the whole middle of the field, makes that touch, makes that turn. Zardes makes the intelligent run, and he scores. Another reason why Catton is also a fantastic right back in that situation.
Well, and he's a backup. I mean, I think the thing that's cool, but we all love Hector Jimenez because you can put him in like 16 different spots on the field, and he's, you know, serviceable in all those spots. Catton has that ability. I mean, you can play Catton as a right back. You can play him as a DM. You can play him all over the place, and he can do the job. I think he gives us a tremendous amount of versatility, especially in tournaments like this. I think one thing that you all have to keep in mind when you're thinking about this COVID Cup thing or whatever the heck this season ends up being, I don't think it's going to be a normal season. They're going to have to condense it. It's going to be weird. Depth is going to be really important because you're going to be playing 2-3 games a week rather than the one game, take a week off, get everybody back to 100%. So you're going to see more rotation, whether it's in Florida or wherever the heck they have the rest of the season. It's going to be weird. Guys like Catton are going to need to play games. Sometimes they're going to need to fill in at right back. Sometimes it's going to need to be somewhere else. Guys like him and Jimenez are really going to help us paper over the cracks that other teams are not going to be able to paper over. And it's really going to pay off as the season rolls on.
In a five substitution setting, that's going to be really helpful. That's going to be really helpful because you don't have to play everybody 90 minutes. You don't have to, you know, you get that break. And yes, having guys like that. And like, it was amazing that Keita came in on short notice, plugged in right away, played good. You know, Josh Williams, you kind of know what to expect from Josh Williams. He had actually a really good game, I felt. Mm-hmm. That the fact that you can plug and play those guys. Guys, we haven't even seen Milton Valenzuela yet.
Yeah,
I know. Are we going to see him tomorrow? They've really been conservative with him, and for good reason. We want to make sure that he's fit. But maybe tomorrow, with the way this game sort of shapes up as not being a must-win for the Crew, they see him at least coming off the bench and getting 30 minutes. Has anybody heard anything about this?
I don't think we've heard anything about it yet. I believe yesterday, Caleb told us that there's no announcements yet on Room or Nagby, who suffered from, you know, cramps towards the end of the New York win, but no word on Milton Valenzuela. I don't know if we'll see him. I mean, I think if the Crew get a lead early on and they know that that first place and 9 points are shored up, because Caleb has been talking about it all week. We're focused on that game for 9 points. We're treating this like a regular season game. He's telling his guys, it doesn't matter, you know, if they're going to basically win the group, and we'll get into scenarios in a bit, and we'll explain why Columbus basically has the group settled and will finish in first place. But I think the only time we'll see Milton in tomorrow's game would be if there's a big lead. But it's nice to see Catton and Jimenez and some of the other guys get some experience. But I'd love to see Valenzuela come in for like a knockout stage game potentially, because I'd love to see how he fits into this system since we haven't really seen much of him in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, a fully fit Milton Valenzuela, we know, it's been a while, but we know what a difference maker he can make, and I'm just chomping at the bit to get him back out there as well. Just another guy that certainly needs some work, so we'll see what happens. Alex, you put something mean about NTN the other night. You're going to take that back since he did get the assist, or are we going to turn our back on him forever for missing that wide open net?
Well, so what I said after that miss was that Etienne was dead to me forever. I was a little bit heated in the moment.
11:30 p.m. I can't blame you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a terrible miss. I mean, that's the kind of miss that would have, you know, made Chris Wondolowski blush. I mean, it was really, really bad. You know, I would have buried that one. But no, I mean, he's a young kid, and you know, that kind of stuff is going to happen. I thought he brushed it off well and kept going. It didn't, you know, break him like it could some players. I mean, some players, you have a really embarrassing moment and you almost have to sub them out after that because they can't get out of their own head about it. But again, talking about the confidence of this team, they really believe in themselves. Etienne believed in himself and he put in a good shift after that. Does that mean that I forgive him for that terrible miss? No. Am I going to be pissed off about that for at least a couple more weeks? 100%. Yeah, that was an easy gimme goal.
All right.
And it was terrible.
It also helped that it happened right before the hydration break. I think if he had to keep playing after the miss, mm-hmm. it would have been in his head a little bit more. As soon as he had that bad miss, the hydration break came. You saw his teammates rally around him and talk to him about it. He had time to settle down. So I definitely think the hydration break helped to his favor.
I was on the phone with my brother when this happened, and I screamed. Like, I literally screamed. I was I was louder for that miss than
scream?
I was for
any Can you read that scream for us?
You
what
know,
does it
I
sound like?
I can't. You guys will have to, we'll have to see if Etienne or somebody else recreates that moment some point during the season. If we're all watching a game together on Zoom or whatever, you might hear it again. But, you know, it's just one of those emotional things that, you know, I could try to replicate it. It wouldn't be the same, Brian. And I'm not going to rob our listeners of, you know, the fake scream. I was horrified. It was terrible. If that was a 13-year-old out there, it would have been like you.
In the grand scheme of things, it's not that big a disaster.
No, and I think that's what's great is that we're so good that something like that happens.
I was proud
like,
of them. Because we're only going to win by 2 goals. All right. Well, I was proud of him. I thought he played well, and there was nobody on the field that had more personally to prove than he did, and that could go any number of ways. And other than that obvious miss, I thought he played a great game. Is he going to be a starter every week? He's not. But is he a piece off the bench late in the game when you need an injection of energy? Yeah, absolutely. So
I think
I thought he played really well.
Yeah, I think he's a great asset for this team. I think that he's someone who in the long term is going to really become a big part of this organization. I'm excited for what he's going to bring. I think he's a great presence off the field as well. I mean, he's very active on Twitter and you know, speaking his mind about important issues, and I love that. I'm excited to have him in black and gold. It's going to take me a couple weeks to forgive that miss, I think. I'll get over it.
All right. So apparently Bart has found one of your screams on YouTube. Is that possible, Bart? Do you care speak to that?
Yeah. I was able to actually we went in and their folks Jeff Bezos was able to hack into Alex's phone and turn it on while he was watching, so we have it recorded, and there's a YouTube video of it on there. BBC produced it and everything, but if you're familiar with the Neanderthal scream, it's terrific, and you got Alex.
I'm terrified to listen.
All right, go ahead and drop that in there, Sam, in the final version of this.
All right. Well, should I do like the intro? Should I be like, okay, guys, here's the scream.
All right. Well, that closes the door on Crew 2, Red Bulls Nothing. In a few moments, Ari will go over the scenarios. And most of the scenarios have the crew finishing in first. And moving on, of course, to the knockout stage, which is already settled. But first, we do have a match tomorrow night against Atlanta. Bizarre scene last week where Atlanta loses to Cincinnati 1-0 after getting one player sent off early on double yellows, and then J.J. Williams sent off in stoppage time in the second half. It's gone. I can't think of a team that's gone to hell as fast as they have. And it's kind of funny because their fans are such a bunch of crybabies. So did anyone watch that game?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
What did you learn about Atlanta that would concern the crew?
Not much with the team that's playing right now that I would be too concerned with. When it comes to going forward and their attack, they just look flat and uncreative without Joseph Martinez. It's basically Barco and Pity Martinez trying to carry the load and do everything on their own. I don't know if we'll see Adam John play against his former team tomorrow. I don't know what his injury status is, because he did have to come out of the game in the first half against Cincinnati. But let's face it, both teams in that game did not play well. Cincinnati had a dreadful first half. They had 10 men from the 26th. They were playing against 10 men from the 26th minute onwards and were still playing negative football, to the point where they had a 2-on-7 breakaway with a man advantage. That doesn't make sense. And Cincinnati just got lucky with one great Frankie Amaya finish with the left foot finesse into the net past Brad Guzan. He was poorly positioned for the most part. But at the same time, it was a pretty good shot, kind of like a 50-50. I wouldn't totally put it on Guzan and pull the blame on him. It was a good finish by Amaya. But Atlanta just does not look like a good team right now. They missed Joseph Martinez. And granted, I think without Joseph, if we had seen a regular season play out and Joseph Martinez was not in the team, and we saw this, you know, Barco, John, and Pity Martinez front three gel a little bit more, I think they could get better over time and Atlanta would start to pick up some points against some of the weaker teams in the East, maybe against some of the middle ground teams. But this Atlanta roster without Joseph Martinez against Columbus, I'd take the Crew any day of the week, especially with the way they've been playing in this tournament.
So I want to preface this by saying that I only saw the highlights. But I think Brad Guzan had a little bit of a senior moment on that goal. It got about halfway to him before he realized that it was a ball heading towards him. And then he tried to save it. But he kind of like stood there and watched it for a second. It was kind of like his brain was processing. He is not the goalkeeper that he was a couple years ago, especially not the goalkeeper that he was a decade ago. And I think there's an opportunity for the Crew to, you know, really embarrass him. Like I said, I hope Mokhtar takes a couple chances against him, because I think there's a better than average chance that Guzan's going to screw it up.
Well, I thought it was funny, too, because you'd had, I think, just prior that day, one Alexi Lawless, you know, going on Twitter talking about how, Zach Steffen going back to Man City to train, you know, with the Blues. That's not what the U.S. national team needs right now. They need someone who's getting regular games, someone like Brad Guzan. He's just ready to hand him back the mantle, the number one shirt. And then you see it. That was my same thought, too, Alex. When I saw that, I was like, yes, let's give him some credit for the shot, but and the ambition to take it. But it looked like something that I think Zach Steffen, even if he isn't getting regular, you know, starting every game, is going to be stopping that one without too much trouble. And I do think we are overlooking, though, the masterclass tactical performance from Jan Stam or Yap Stam or Yomp. What Yomp Stamp, whatever his name is. I don't
it's
know.
Fine.
It's just, it was hilarious.
They don't even know what his name is. Yeah, they don't know his coach.
Just looking at this 1-0 win after spending 20 minutes up a man against, you know, the shell of Atlanta United, the ones that we're used to, and just going back to say, you know, actually, this proves that silver lining. We spent a lot of time debating last week, our Crew is good as they are, or is it just Cincinnati's that bad? I think after looking at that result, the answer is just again reinforced. Yes, yes. Since that bad, Crew is that good, because good Lord, if that pitiful Cincinnati team can still manage to beat Atlanta like that, I mean, you know, even granted up a man for three quarters of the match, I think Crew, we should be able to dispatch with United without too much difficulty.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with you that Cincinnati were terrible. I personally enjoyed that they will have one goal to put in their season highlight video at the end of the year. They can show that goal like 15 times and make it like a 1-minute 30-second season highlight and try to sell $5,000 seats in the new stadium using that. So that's going to be great. I think Atlanta are a very poor team. I think that this whole tournament is super weird. The responses from Cincinnati fans online after that game, if you haven't seen it, please go check it out. Because they are as delusional as any group of fans I've ever seen in my entire life. Just ping-ponging between we're terrible and, oh my God, we're going to win everything. On the Alexi Lawless thing, though, I want to touch on this as well about this Brad Guzan thing. I think if Greg Berhalter wants to win a World Cup, he should just call Alexi Lawless every night and say, Alexi, buddy, need your opinion on this. You know, who should I start? And then do the opposite of whatever he says. You know,
take a George Costanza approach to it, essentially.
Yeah, just inverse whatever advice Alexi gives you, and you're set. You're going to beat Argentina. You're going to beat Italy. You're going to get through to everybody. It's going to be incredible. You know, we're going to bring the World Cup home, and then we're going to host. It'll be amazing. Can't wait.
And right after we come home from Qatar with the World Cup, the parade will be in New York City on Christmas. Perfect.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. It'd be ticker tape parade in the middle of winter in New York City. What could go wrong?
Yeah.
If we're still weather, able to
weather
do
will
parades,
be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the weather's going to be great.
Let's go around the room here, the virtual room, and give some scores for tomorrow night crew in Atlanta on ESPN2 at 8 o'clock. Mark.
I'm going to go with 3-1 in this one. I think crew do finally concede a goal. You know, we may be seeing, I suspect you're probably going to see, you know, Buba Keita back at the center back position. Maybe we see Schoberg getting the start, because it does sound like that Caleb Porter is going to go with the rotation, and then still the question mark around Aloy Room and whether he's going to be able to start and whether he even risk it. Since Azori's going to, you know, confirm for us, they've more or less punched their ticket and have that number one seed all but locked down. So I think, you know, maybe we see Tarble, maybe we see Lamson in there, but I think Atlanta might sneak a goal in there. But I think the Columbus attacks are just going to be overwhelming. It'd be interesting to see, again, if we see a Valenzuela in there. But I think, you know, Mokhtar, a chance to really do something. I think, you know, maybe we see Adi and he grabs one. But I think Zelrayan's probably still going to get some time, and just we've been able to see now from whenever he is in the game, he's going to influence it and make something happen. And I think he makes something happen for Columbus. And we cruise past Atlanta and head into the knockout round with whoever it is we're going to get coming out of what group D, I'm not sure. Or he's going to cover all that for us.
All right, Alex?
I'm going to go with 3-1. I think the crew are going to be really good, because we are really good. And every other team sucks, especially Atlanta. And especially Cincinnati. They should probably just move those two franchises to different cities after this. I think the crew are just going to be a better team. I think that we will not see Room. I think that they're not going to risk it. I don't know why you would risk it. If he's even 95%, they should not put him out there. And I think the same thing for Valenzuela. I think we might see Valenzuela off the bench in the second half, maybe for 15, 20 minutes, let him get some action in the legs a little bit, try to get him a little bit back to match fitness, especially with the heat down there. I think kind of easing him back into things will be the way to go. But I think Atlanta's just going to be overwhelmed. They're not going to have the ability to kind of put up much of a fight against us. I think that we'll see a set piece goal. I call a set piece goal. I like Josh Williams for one. I think that this team is just, you know, this Atlanta team doesn't know what's going on, so he's going to be able to get away from his man and get one in there. So 3-1.
Well, I'm going to need him, because Wormgur is out 4 to 6 months. Just had ankle surgery. We forgot to note that earlier, and we wish him nothing but the best. Sam, you got a pick?
I mean, I was going to say 3-1, but obviously Alex and Bart already took that. So I'm going to go 3-0. I think Caleb does rotate quite a bit, but still under five people. And I don't think you put like Schoberg and Keita in at the same time, because you want one that's long time familiar with the experience. But I could see them rotating throughout the game depending on how the game goes. And if the crew grab an early lead, then I could see Zardes maybe playing only one half and putting Adi in for the second half. If we do see Milton, it will be just like so they can get him ready for the next round and see how he's feeling and see get him a few touches here and there. But yeah, I'm going to stick with the fact that Atlanta doesn't have anybody who can put the ball in the back of the net. And even the defense with replacement parts, or let's say second string parts, I think the defense is still going to do pretty good. So 3-0.
All right. 3-0. All right. All right.
I'm going to be more conservative and say a 1-0 crew win. I think we will. I know. I'm going to be more conservative, partly because let's face Atlanta defensively.
Man.
Yeah. Atlanta defensively has still been okay. They've only conceded a goal each game. I think attacking wise, they're just abysmal. I don't think they'll be able to score past Room or whoever we'll see in goal. But I think we'll see rotation within the game. I actually expect Caleb Porter to put a couple of the more regular starters out for this game for two factors. The fact that he's thinking about this as a regular season game, important to get those 3 points for not just the regular season, but to finish the group with a perfect record. And by the way, if Columbus with a perfect record, they might be maybe one of three teams in the whole tournament that finish with a perfect record. Orlando or Philly can finish with a perfect record. And then Portland, if they beat LAFC, there might only be one team that finishes with a perfect record. And another factor is Columbus is playing their round of 16 game next Tuesday. So they have a full week of rest before they start the tournament mentality, the knockout mentality. So I think we see more starters, more regular starters begin the game and then more rotation throughout. But I'm going to stay conservative with 1-0 simply because Atlanta United defensively hasn't been as poor as, say, Cincinnati.
I can't believe you hate the Crew.
I can't believe you.
Only 1-0. Hate the Crew, man. Unbelievable. Unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
All right, Ari, you wrote up the scenarios for advancement into the knockout round. Let's just simplify it. I mean, is there any way that the Crew doesn't win the group?
And first off, I just want to mention, this is kind of like my bread and butter. I love going through this kind of stuff when a World Cup or Euros come around. So I'm like really enthusiastic about talking about this right now. But the only way Columbus can't win the group is if they don't beat Atlanta. And if New York or Cincy get the dub against either one and make up the goal difference. But let's face it, Columbus has got a 7-goal edge on New York and a 9-goal edge on Cincinnati. So you're either talking about a complete embarrassment of riches, New York beating Cincy or Cincy beating New York, or a combo. Atlanta wins 5-0 and New York beats Cincy 4-5-0. And the chances of that are very astronomical.
Is it bad that I would accept second place in the group if New York beat Cincinnati by 8 goals? Like, that would be
if that's your compromise, I get it.
You'd be satisfied with 7.
Yeah, if that's your compromise, I do get it. But if you want the Crew to have a relative an easier round of 16 game, winning the group would benefit them more, because winning the group puts you up against the runner-up of Group D, which is going to be either RSL, SKC, or Minnesota. Whereas if the Crew finish second in the group, you're automatically playing either Portland, who have looked very solid, could also be one of those teams that finish with a perfect record, or you play LAFC, who just smacked around the galaxy in El Tráfico in the middle of the night. So from a standpoint of not just who you face in the round of 16, but also from a standpoint of just, you know, being the better team, Columbus winning the group is the most beneficial thing. But if you would rather see, Alex, an 8-0 Red Bull thrashing, but the Crew can still tie 0-0 or win 1-0 and they would still win the group. It's just they would have to lose to Atlanta. Columbus has to lose to Atlanta if there's any chance of them finishing in second place.
So we're really saying the best case scenario here is for the Crew to at least get a draw. And then for New York Red Bull to win by double digits over Cincinnati.
Exactly, because then Columbus would finish on 7, first place. New York would finish on 6 points and with like a +9 goal differential.
I'll take a draw in an 11-1 victory for New York Red Bull. I'll take that for sure.
I think that's a fair compromise, no?
Yeah. Let's hope for that.
Yeah. But
Do we have any preference over who we play, assuming first place here, which I'm assuming? RSL, Minnesota, or Sporting KC, any preference?
I kind of want to play RSL. I think RSL is a very, you know, nonchalant, very bland team. They're not very exciting to watch, whereas SKC have this great new duo in Gadi Kinda and Alan Pulido attacking. Minnesota is a team that can just come out of nowhere and play fantastic or, you know, lose a lead. Or, not lose a lead. They beat SKC on a comeback. But Minnesota is a very random team. We could see them at their best against Columbus. If I would take any team, I would take RSL. You know, Justin Merrim reunion, but at the same time, also, I think that's a team that Columbus can control and beat to make the quarterfinal. And our quarterfinal opponent could be San Jose, since San Jose clinched the Group B victory and have actually played very, very well. An amazing comeback against Vancouver. And San Jose is guaranteed to play a third place side. So San Jose as a quarterfinal opponent, as the assumption, I think that's another team that the Crew can take. So I think semifinal might be the place where we see Columbus, you know, end up and finally face like a really hard opponent. But based on the way this tournament is going, it's been really random. I mean, New York City finishing third in Group A behind Orlando and Philly, you know, Chicago beating Seattle and the Sounders just clinching a spot last night with their big win against Vancouver, New England playing well in Group C and Montreal not playing very well. And finally, in Group F, the Galaxy have just been an embarrassment. 8 goals conceded in their 2 games. Houston might actually finish in third and maybe make the round of 16.
Do we know what teams get, if anything, for playoff victories? Obviously, the group stage games count for points, and winning the whole thing counts for a Champions League spot. Does making the semifinals get you something? I honestly have no idea about the format.
I don't know about the format either, but an educated guess and assumption, in my opinion, would be maybe some more reward money for getting into the semifinals, because that's what you'd usually see in a Champions League or in a World Cup. But, I mean, obviously no regular season points attached to the knockout games, but I would say more reward money to make the later rounds. Again, that's an educated guess, not a fact. But I honestly think based on the way the Crew are playing through these first 2 games, and if we see a good performance against Atlanta tomorrow night, this team can legitimately win this tournament.
I got an award idea. National television appearances.
I would take that.
There you go.
Yeah.
The only way we're going to get it.
At ESPN 2. There you go.
Yeah, and the fact that the game was moved to national television is a great sign. One, I think the league and ESPN are confident that the Crew, you know, being one of the better teams in this tournament, can draw more of an audience, especially against Atlanta, who are a pretty popular team around the league. But also, this tournament is starting to generate interest. I'm very curious to see what it's going to look like in the knockout round, because the knockout round begins in the midst of the first weekend of Major League Baseball. So I'm very curious to see whether or not the interest dwindles or stays where it is or even grows, because this tournament has started to grow in interest. The games are getting better. There's a lot of randomness to it. There's a lot of goals as well. And the fact that MLS and ESPN were confident to add more nationally televised games into the final group stage round, I think that's an excellent sign.
I am very curious, though, because I believe in the first iteration of that schedule, the Crew were promised a game on ESPN, one of the ESPN family of networks, before the actual schedule came out, and they found out that they have no games on ESPN. So maybe they were like, this wasn't what the league was expecting, and now that it is turning better than they thought, that's why they brought them back to ESPN. That's my guess, but they're still keeping them on TUDN, and you can watch that on Twitter.
Yeah, and TUDN and obviously TSN for people that live in Canada. But, I mean, the fact that the assumption was is that the Crew were going to be playing 8 p.m. games in the group stage, and then the league is like, all right, you're playing at 10:30 at night against Cincinnati and New York, and now you're going to play at 8 p.m. I mean, the last 10:30 game we're going to see in this tournament is going to be in the quarterfinals. And then it's only going to be 8 p.m. from the semis and the finals. So only 3 games and only 2 rounds where there's not a single late kickoff. The morning kickoffs are done, I think, after the group stage. Those are done and dusted. And it sounds like teams absolutely abhor the 9 a.m. games. But yeah. I get it.
Yeah. Well, they hadn't.
But I get it from a scheduling perspective. Yeah. But like, I get it from a scheduling perspective. The flexibility needed to show. Like, one thing that I mentioned before the tournament started, when the draw came out, why are the final group games not being played simultaneously? Because that's how it should be. So that way, teams don't know results. They could rig necessarily where they want to finish second or third. Not saying teams are going to do that. There's a possibility that they would have a better idea in mind of who they want to play, especially in Group E, because Cincy and New York have a full day to sleep on whether or not Columbus or Atlanta win the game. Because if Atlanta wins, they basically have to win. A draw actually allows Atlanta a shot to make it as a third-place team. But if Cincy or New York come out there saying, all right, we know we need a win, whereas if Atlanta loses, it's like, well, we don't really need a win. If we both settle for a draw, then we both go through. But I get it from the scheduling perspective because of the fact that the testing, and we saw 2 teams drop out because of COVID. But I'm really excited for these final round of group games. And then the fact that we're going to have baseball and MLS, WNBA to watch this weekend. It's sports is back, people. It's great to see.
Well, do you think that Cincinnati, if they were trying to tie, they'd be able to pull it off?
No. Well, the amount of chances that their attackers maybe. But if you take Alex's opposite approach, Reggaeton or Kubo or Kakuta Mane don't try and score, then they might accidentally score.
Yeah, I'm scared about the idea of teams fixing these games. You know, as we all know, the only person who's allowed to fix games is Don Garber when he sends Mark Geiger for Columbus assignments, or a couple other of his best buds who, you know, somehow card like five crew players in the first 15 minutes. Love that. Love when that happens. Mm-hmm. Or those phantom penalties that we always see at Crew Stadium. Yeah, I think it would be a good idea.
You're breaking up really bad in our Zoom feed now, Alex. I think that Don Garber's jamming our signal, so we better wrap up. I think we covered everything pretty well. Crew and Atlanta tomorrow at 8 o'clock, and then soon we'll find out how we're going to play in the knockout stage. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's always great watching your team perform as well as this bunch has, and I'm really excited for the future. And to think back where we were in September and October and August last year, it's been a quick turnaround. It's really exciting to see. So thanks to everyone for listening to the Mass Report podcast. Ori and Bart and Alex and Sam, I'm Brian, and we'll be back next Monday to talk about Atlanta, to talk about the knockout stage and whatever else comes along, and Alex's scream and all. Thanks for listening. See you next week.